The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on January 16, 2005. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to see you all today. Well, last week talked about compassion in view of the tsunami event that occurred recently. I felt that some of what I wanted to say didn't really get across. So I think I want to say a little more about that. Last week I talked somewhat about, I was kind of focused on what compassion is not. Maybe this time I want to say a little bit about what compassion is. A little bit more about that. Talked about that some last week, but I think we can get into that a little more. Make it a little clearer, I think. And last week, talking about the tsunami, pointed out that compassion isn't this this thing that just wells up in us because of some particular event in the world, such as the tsunami. Of course, compassion could be there, and suddenly we feel some compassion, some concern for others, their plight, their situation. But compassion, true compassion, is not our desire to somehow take care of those unfortunate people over there, or out there, or in front of me now on the sidewalk. It isn't just simply that something like that occurs, we see that suffering out there, and now our heart goes out. That's not really true compassion. True compassion is combined with wisdom. And wisdom doesn't see that other, as something separate and apart. This is some of what I was trying to get across last week, but I felt maybe I failed in that attempt. But the true compassion doesn't see the other as such. It isn't a desire to help those poor people over there. True compassion is the realization of the fact that you're not cut off, set apart from any other at all. This is wisdom. And as I talked about last week, that compassion, to be true compassion, has to function with wisdom. For compassion to be there, it is understanding and seeing the situation through the eyes of wisdom, not through our own personal selfish points of view. Where, yes, of course, we feel the suffering of others, we see that, and our hearts go out, of course. But compassion, for compassion to be there, true compassion is, that isn't something that just suddenly appears now because of some outside event. The situation has always called for it. It's always been here. So compassion is something that's very steady in the heart. That comes with actually seeing, knowing, realizing, understanding the true situation that we're in. It isn't just there because of some crisis now. Of course, a crisis can occur, and granted, there's compassion there, but that stuff that we suddenly feel isn't necessarily present with wisdom. And without that, it's not exactly true compassion either. As the situation changes, or we've given our $10, $100, whatever, now we've relieved our sense of guilt, responsibility, whatever, and we turn our attention from that. The news media stops covering it. Well, where's our compassion? Compassion is there in the heart as long as we are seeing, present, fully here in this moment. Compassion is naturally there. And it manifests not with some spectacular event. Well, I mean, it could, but it doesn't take that to bring it out. It is a matter of, how are you taking care of, how did you leave your shoes out here? How did you approach the building? How were you when you got up this morning? How did you talk to people? You know, how do you treat your your dishes when you're eating. You know, in the Sashin, of course, we eat with the Orioki, where we're taking great care. But even there, maybe we're not. But we have this opportunity to take great care of our dishes and how we're eating and the tasting of the food. This is all done with the heart of compassion. If we're truly present in there, we're taking care of all of these things. Even the food, even as we eat it, we are taking care of it with the heart of compassion. If we really understand this. And of course, we don't have to be sitting in Orioki to take care of it. When you're just at your place at home, at dinner, or in a restaurant. This is what our practice is. This is what our understanding is. This is what we work toward. This is what we move toward in our practice and in our understanding. There's no time for you to be judgmental of yourself, your shortcomings, the fact that you keep missing this mark, the fact that maybe it just seems to take you forever to even start to understand what this practice is. We can be at it for many years and we still don't seem to get it. Why is that? Well, you don't need to get down on yourself for that, because most of us are very slow to understand this. I've been at this practice now for, 37 years or so. I don't know how long it's been. It's been over 30 years. And I haven't perfected it. I'm still learning it. I'm still trying to keep my life here, present, with just this. There's no time for us. I mean, if you feel like you have to get down on yourself and scold yourself in some way for your shortcomings and slipping off this, well, certainly I do. Because I've probably been at it longer than any of you in this room, probably. And I have no excuse, of course, you see. None of us really do have any excuse for our shortcomings and slipping off the fact that we're not present, and we might not really be treating others and just the things that we use and work with compassion and a true heart. But little by little, we can come to learn this. I don't know anybody who walks this path perfectly with a steady mind of compassion and wisdom never failing. I know of no one like this. This means that you don't need to be hard on yourself in that way, judging yourself. Treat yourself with some compassion here. But also realize that it doesn't mean this is some excuse. You should never excuse yourself for slipping off this mark. Just realize that if you have, then you have. And see now, in this moment, you have no more time for anything else but to just come back. No more time for any more comment. You already noticed, that's good enough. Now let's just come back. This is compassion toward yourself. Giving you the opportunity maybe to extend this kind of heart and mind to others as well. So compassion combined with wisdom, there's a steadiness to it, an evenness to it. Doesn't just surge up in us because of some crisis that has occurred in the world, or maybe some accident that's just happened on the corner right in front of us. And of course there are those moments when it was brought up last week, something like this might occur, and suddenly we forget ourselves and we plunge into the situation to take care of it selflessly. There might be wisdom with that, maybe not. It could be a foolish act, a careless act as well. The fact that we're risking our own life, we might not even be fully aware of that yet, because we're just immediately reacting. So it's hard to say if that's really an act of compassion or not. I mean, it could be if wisdom is there, then it could be. But that's the element that needs to be present in our mind. And of course, with that element is a selflessness, but it's a kind of steady selflessness that we can learn to cultivate over time. Never holding it perfectly from moment to moment, as I said. Maybe not, probably not. But nevertheless, we can learn this and we can cultivate this in our heart and mind. And that is what our practice and what this teaching is about. It's very important that we understand this and that we take this to heart. And by taking it to heart, it means that we actually begin to practice it. make that effort in each moment to bring ourselves back and to practice it. And if the big events in the world occur, or right there in front of us on the street corner, we're still present, ready to take up whatever needs to be done. Or leave it alone then as well. Perhaps that's what needs to be done. But if we're present with it, and to the degree we forget ourselves and just stay present with the moment, now we can act out of a heart of compassion and understanding and wisdom. So this is what it is. I felt last week I didn't give that enough attention, enough weight to bring our attention to what compassion is. So I wanted to revisit that this week. Another thing about compassion that I wanted to say, you know, we often have the idea, well, of course, a teacher, a Buddhist teacher, Zen teacher, should be compassionate. But then we have this idea that compassion is like being, whoa, just kind of sweet and nice and gentle and just kind of patting you on the head and talking to you in nice ways and talking as if just marshmallows are coming out of the mouth, you know, and just really sweet and nice. This would be compassion. But of course, we have an abundant examples of teachers, particularly in the Zen tradition, that shout and hit, you know, stuff like this. And that could be part of their personality, you know, and maybe the culture also allows it, that sort of thing. My feeling is if I went around doing a lot of shouting and hitting, I wouldn't see too many of you here, you know, so I tend not to do that. I don't tend not to, I don't do that. I've never done it, actually, and I don't think I'll ever start. And it's not really my personality either. But sometimes to speak in a stern way, or to not have any, to put up with any nonsense, just to cut it off at some point. I'm not a very good teacher in that regard, because I'm not strict enough. Sometimes I hear people thinking I'm kind of strict. I don't think so. I should be more strict and put up with much less. For your sake. You know, not for mine. I don't need it. But for your sake. And maybe as I get older and more crotchety and things like that, and you won't argue with an old man, you know, that sort of thing, maybe I can get away with more and more. So maybe gradually this will improve. But for now, I'm still thinking of myself kind of young yet, you know. Not 60 yet anyway, so, you know. But it's hard for me to get away with stuff like that. But just recently Jean came upon this passage, but it was Pema Chodron, I think it was, who pointed out her teacher was Trungpa Rinpoche. And apparently he said that a teacher is one, or the function of a teacher is to insult you. The function of a teacher is to insult you. Well, yeah, I understand that. It might be a little too blunt. I don't know if that the whole point is just to insult you. But if we look at it this way, that if you're really serious about taking up this practice in this way and learning to walk this path, it is a walk and a path of egolessness. And sooner or later, you're going to come up, and particularly if you're working with a teacher who really wants to help you awaken, to see with the eye of wisdom and to act out of a compassionate heart. And if they themselves are also functioning in this way, they'll be acting out of a compassionate heart, but they might not necessarily be talking to you, at least all the time, with this gentle, sweet voice. They might be very blunt and direct at some moment. Or in some other way, bring you to a point where you really have to confront yourself. You need to take a look at yourself. Because this is where it all comes down. And this also is compassion. It's compassionate to help people, you know, come to this point where they begin to do this for themselves. But it's also compassionate. The compassion is at work there for you finally to even admit and to realize and to see your shortcomings, perhaps. I don't know, shortcomings is the way of looking at it. But our stinky nature. We have this vision of ourselves, we see ourselves as, yes, okay, I'm a compassionate person. Maybe we think that. Sometimes we don't. Maybe I'm not really such a compassionate. But then we have something else that we're hanging on to. Something else that we've created that justifies our personality, our character, our being here. We're holding to that. Sooner or later, that's going to be struck one way or another. And a compassionate teacher will bring you to the point where you really have to sit down and look at that. If we're really taking up this path in this work, this has to be done at some point. This is about waking up. And it involves, more than anything else, that you start to see yourself. You have to realize that, along with compassion and truly seeing yourself, there's nothing there for you, getting back to what I had said earlier, nothing here for you to condemn or to scold. But there's also no excuse. This is what you are. This is how you manifest. This is what you think. This is what you've been grasping. This is how you've been acting and behaving. This is how you carry on. You need to see how that is. And get truly honest with yourself. Not in a judgmental way and thinking now that you're bad or anything else, because you're not. You're not really anything in particular, never have been. But we can kind of see the ways that we carry on, what we think, what we hold to, what we grasp, how we frame ourselves in our mind, actually freezing ourselves out. But you're not really any particular way. And to see yourself like this, to begin to see yourself like this, too, is compassion. Where you're not only are you not pinning down other people, you're not pinning down yourself as well. But you need to be honest with yourself. You need to see that. See that for what it is. And it's not that it's bad or, boy, I just am not measuring up, whatever. It's just a matter of seeing that for what it is. And in realizing what that is, already we have changed. Of course, we're changing all the time anyway. But if we're not paying attention, wisdom is not engaged. Neither is compassion. Neither is this kind of transformation that we all want. We come to this practice, we take it up because maybe we want to be free of our suffering. And we think there's something about this practice that leads to that. And in a sense, that's true. I mean, that is what this is all about, really. The Buddha said, I teach two things, basically. Dukkha and release from dukkha. And we can probably sense that. So we come to this wanting to be released from our pain, our suffering, and confusion. But we never look at ourselves. And well, what do you expect is going to occur here? This change that you're looking for, this freedom, this release, is going to occur with you here. If you never look this way, what do you expect is going to happen? The old meatball landing on us from outside, right? You know, that image Norma used, huh? There's no meatball, you know? You have to take this up yourself. And the teacher, you know, might insult you, as Trungpa said. Yeah, not because the teacher out to insult you. But sooner or later, something will insult you. But, you know, you can't be insulted if you don't hold yourself together at some particular thing. You can't be insulted. And so the fact that you've been insulted really gives you something to look at now. And instead of leaving in a huff or getting mad or, you know, thinking the teacher is cruel or mean or that wasn't fair, you shouldn't, you know, whatever. Always something else. But not looking at our own heart and mind. But compassion and wisdom, well, first of all, is right here. And out of this comes the kind of steadiness of heart and mind. And the real work and the transformation, the chance for that transformation to take place. I mean the transformation of just simply waking up. Of course, transformation is nothing but transformation. But usually we just go on and on and on and on and on and on in our confusion, our suffering, our never understanding, never coming to grips with it. So anyway, that's just a couple more things I wanted to say about this this matter of compassion. So again, to identify compassion with some big event, something out of your heart goes out to those others and you're feeling, okay, all right. But if there's no wisdom in it, that's not exactly compassion. And also, if you're not looking at yourself, pretty hard for compassion to come, because compassion has to combine with wisdom. But wisdom is to be, is to see with that eye that actually sees what is here. And if we're not looking at what is here, pretty difficult for true compassion to manifest and to unfold in this moment. So anyway, I've probably said enough about this, but any questions or arguments, comments? Yes?
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about the role our own experiences play in developing compassion? Because it seems like kind of a two-edged sword. In other words, if I've lost someone to death, let's say, then that enables me to perhaps understand the suffering of someone else in a similar circumstance, but then it also has the potential for confusing it a bit, because I'm putting my own experience in that.
Right. But I think just to have that awareness right now that you spoke of, the fact that you realize that this could confuse it, that's pretty good, just to keep that straight. That other person isn't you. On the other hand, the fact that we have all lost someone, most of us, I would think, by the time we've lived a certain number of years at least, we've lost someone very close to us. And I think we all have a pretty good sense of what that feels like. And so if in this moment now you see someone who's just recently lost someone very close to them, certainly I think we can have a pretty good sense of where they might be with that. But just be present with that without reading any extra stuff into it, like how I would be, or that we go too far with that. We make it a little bit too personal in that way. But just to understand it in a very general way, this general understanding and this general approach too, by the way, it always applies just in what I was talking about, compassion and the steadiness of compassion. It's coming out of just a general understanding and approach to every situation. So even though a specific and big event might occur, it's still, we keep this calm and steady approach to it. And the same thing would apply here as well. But so often we think, well, there's some specific event, some specific thing, and I need to reach in there and deal with it in some specific way. Grasping, reaching, trying to control, and then also worried about, am I doing this right? Am I really helping this person? All of this gets into the situation. It's a matter of just in this, again, stepping back and in this more general way, realize what's happening there. Realize what we're doing. We're trying to control, trying to grasp, trying to interpret all of this. None of that needs to be done. In a very general way, we can see this person here. They're grief-stricken. We can see that. We know what that feels like. That's enough. And now act out of that. Just be there. Oftentimes, too, we're, say, at a funeral or whatever, we feel very uncomfortable because somebody we know, they've lost someone close, and now we don't know what to say. We don't realize that you don't have to say anything. Just being there. See? And maybe in a moment, there's just a word will naturally come out of your mouth. Maybe not. But we're there. And just our presence there already supports that person, helps that person. Our minds are always lunging toward that thing that we can grasp and get hold of. And we end up losing the full sense of what is actually happening here. And how we can just settle into this moment and be present with it. So I don't know, did that help you there? Yeah, Nancy.
What's the meatball story that falls out of the
Yeah, Norm tells this story. It was from R. Crumb comic. I don't know if you know R. Crumb. Norm used to be an old R. Crumb fan, I guess. The way Norm told it, though, turns out, wasn't the way R. Crumb depicted it. But this is how Norm remembered it. And he used to tell a story of how one day Meatball falls out of the sky and hits somebody. And all of a sudden, you know, before they were cantankerous and mean and nasty and all, they're nice and they're compassionate and they're wise and, you know, all of this, you know. And a year or two later, another meatball falls out of the sky and hits somebody else. Same thing, you know. What was it? I think it was like two people at a checkout line in a grocery store, and they're sitting there fighting and squabbling. And these meatballs just seem to come out of nowhere, and just a meatball hits this person, and all of a sudden, they're after you. You please go ahead, and all this sort of thing. Well, pretty soon, more and more meatballs were falling, you know. And then the meatballs seemed to die back again, and now Meatball hasn't fallen out of the sky for the last however many years, you know. But people were going around waiting for the meatballs to fall, you see. And they wanted to be hit by a meatball, you know. And anyway, the end of it is, the last frame is, sorry folks, meatballs don't work this way. Anyway, that's kind of the meatball story. Matt.
It seems like some people like to think of themselves as compassionate people. Go out and do acts and write a resume of all the compassion.
Yeah. Well, I've told this before. My teacher used to say there's no such thing as a good driver. You see, and there's no time for this. I mean, first of all, if I were to tell you I'm a good driver, it's ridiculous. Right now, I'm not driving. I'm not even a driver, let alone a good one. You know. And of course, if I am driving, I'm telling you about what a great driver I am, and then I run into a tree. Where's the good driver, you see? It's in each moment. So you can't say, oh, I'm a compassionate person. And a truly compassionate person would never even think that. It just doesn't come up. Because once again, this compassion has to be combined with wisdom, and with wisdom you'd realize that there's nothing formed here, ever. You know, but isn't there such a thing as compassion? Yeah, coming up in each moment there could be compassion and wisdom as well. But nothing gets pinned down or framed. Yeah, it's pretty hard to get an objective picture of just what that would be. But for each one of us in our own heart and mind, we could, by watching our own mind, we can tell. We can learn to tell. When are you acting out of self here, out of a leaning mind, out of grasping? Or are you just acting out of what the moment calls for, apart from yourself? But if in any given moment there, then we frame it up that, well, I'm a compassionate person, so yes, I do that. You know, but this is ridiculous. You know, that's delusional. And there's no compassion there. Because there's no wisdom. Julie, yeah.
Teacher that's going to say, yeah, I used to be enlightened. That was then.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Right now, I'm still kind of confused, or whatever.
Well, there's many ways of looking at this, but it's just simply to realize that nothing's really frozen. But on the other hand, there is this matter of awakening. And in once seeing what the structure of reality is, so to speak, if you can put it that way, well, that's what it is. It's that understanding. But, of course, in the very next moment, we're back to being caught, you know. Yeah. But with a clarification of the main confusion, you know, things are quite different after that. But nobody can say, I am enlightened. When? Now? I mean, what? Again, now? You know, we can never get hold of that. There's nothing there to be proud of, nothing to claim. All of that stuff, just don't live that way. Just set all that aside and get on with it. No, we don't have to explain who we are and stick a label on it. I'm a good person, bad. I'm enlightened. I'm not enlightened. And I mean that too. Like don't think, oh, I'm not enlightened. What? You can't say that. Don't you realize that enlightenment is sitting in right in the very same chair you're sitting in right now, occupying the very same space. So what do you mean you're not enlightened? But Steve, we'll grasp that again, you see. Just set all of this stuff aside. It's worthless. Just be here, be present, and carry on. with that, with awareness. What more do you want? So we have no more time to justify ourselves in any way. Even to say I'm a Buddhist, you don't really need to do that. Besides, what kind of a Buddhist are you if you're thinking in these terms, freezing something out here and putting on a, you know, some kind of marker, an identity? That's not a full understanding of what the Buddha taught. So what kind of a Buddhist are you? Just, there's no time for that now. This doesn't mean that there aren't Buddhists, that there aren't enlightened people, that there aren't deluded people. It doesn't mean any of this. It's just that we can't get hold of any of it. That's the reality that we're in. Seeing that and realizing that, now compassion is functioning, because that's seeing with wisdom. Yeah. Yes?
The Buddha speaks a fair amount about loving kindness.
Yeah.
The Dalai Lama says his religion has kindness.
Mm-hmm.
And in many traditions, metta's a central practice. But my experience with Zen is not so much that. And can you speak to what role metta has to do?
Yeah. Yeah, we don't speak of that so much. Actually, we do, but we just don't use those terms. Loving kindness, for example. Part of that is if you frame it up too tightly like that and put it on, then it's easy for us to be grasping, and then we start taking on an identity. I'm a loving person, a kind person, and this sort of thing. And this isn't so good. Then we start to get a little stinky, and we're forming ourselves, but we're thinking we're good, this sort of thing. We want to avoid this in some way. And so one way to avoid this is just simply, well, don't grab onto it quite so tightly as that, and having labels for it and things like that. Okay, well, now if we don't do that, now how are we ever going to point this out? That it really would be a healthy exercise for us if we could live out our life in such a way where we extend our heart and mind to others. Like with the practice of loving kindness, well, first of all, we extend this sense of kindness to our relatives. We say they're our kin. You know, this is where the word kindness comes from. They're our kin. We're of their kind. You know, see, so we extend kindness to those who are like us, you know, our own kind, you see. Well, we extend it out to our family and friends, perhaps. And then we can do these exercises. We extend it out to more people, to eventually, you know, our neighbors, and then our country, maybe, and then the whole world, you know, and even our enemies, you know, that kind of stuff. So we can exercise, you know, these kinds of things. But what's behind it? I mean, what's the basis of all of this? Where does this teaching even comes from? Well, it comes from the very insight to realize that there's no separation there in the first place. And were we to realize that, kindness is automatically, you might say, it just follows from that. So it's a matter of exercising this in this way where we start to realize the inseparability of ourselves from everything else. Kindness is in that. It comes out of that. To take some of these other kinds of exercises where we impose it on ourselves sort of from the outside, that can be effective too, just to bring our consciousness up to that level, to start to notice this and how we might be shutting other people out and that sort of thing, and that maybe we need to open our hearts here. But the danger there is that it can begin to create kind of a falseness about it, where we'll take on an identity and this sort of thing. We think we need to act in this way, and then we think that we actually are acting out of a kind heart, when in fact we're actually still acting out of a kind of a greedy heart as well. So there's a danger in that. So for those reasons, we don't go directly into it in that way in the particular school that I was trained in anyway. But we do constantly bring our attention back to the fact that and there's plenty of teachings in Zen that you would find, for example, that were like in the koans and this sort of thing, where we are talking and moving, carrying on in a way where we don't remove ourselves from anything. And kindness is a natural function that comes out of that, you see. So it's treated in that different way. And I don't even want to get into a discussion about which way would be better. I think if you need to activate some kind of conscious and deliberate expanding of your sense of kin, you might say, to others, you know, well, then maybe you need to do that. But just be careful that you don't now start taking on this identity, you know, seeing yourself now as a kind person. truly kind person, you're not thinking of that at all. Kindness doesn't come out of feeling, well, I should be kind, or I want to be kind, you know. But of course, it is helpful, just in spite of how you feel about those people over there, just see if you can act in a kind way right now. Of course, that's a very, very helpful exercise to do. Well, thank you.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.